What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Pickaxe Podcast, presented by DenverStiffs.com. I am your host, and seated across from me is a writer for Dime Magazine, Uproxx, Vice, Players Tribune, and Hardwood Paroxysm. It's Jordan White. Jordan, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I say us, but it's really just me. We're here at Jake's Food and Spirits at 3800 Walnut Street in Denver, Colorado. We'll also be at Jake's on May 17th for Stiff's Night Out. Stiff's Night Out is a Nuggets gathering, get-together, celebration that we do every couple months. On May 17th this year, there's going to be the NBA Draft Lottery, where the Nuggets will find out if we are lucky or not. We have a 21.8% chance of winning the lottery or getting a top three pick in the lottery, one of the best odds we've had in years. So there'll be probably anywhere from 50 to 150 Nuggets fans here pulling together, trying to pull all of our positive energy to get us a top pick. It might not work, but even if it doesn't work, at least we'll be in good company. So come on down May 17th to Jake's Food and Spirits. All right, let's jump right into it. Jordan, I want to ask you, because you just started with the Players Tribune a couple weeks ago, and your first article or your first project was the Nikola Jokic article. Yeah. Did you sit down with him, with Jokic, that is? Did you sit down with him once or several times? Was it at Pepsi Center?
No, it was actually just once. Wow. And it was at his apartment.
Oh, awesome.
So yeah, it was. I mean, you know, it was cool, and you know, he's a really good kid. He really is. I struggle to think of him as only a 20-year-old because you know, like, he's 7 feet tall.
Right.
but yeah, so that, I mean, you know, just like a 45-minute, hour-long interview.
That's cool. And was he pretty eager to talk about basketball in Serbia? Is that like a topic he was?
Yeah, it was. I think he was just eager to talk. And he, like, he's really funny. You know, some of the stuff he was saying, like, he mentioned, and you probably saw in the piece, that, like, he slept. Like, he was asleep when the Nuggets drafted him.
Yeah.
And his brother was like, so pumped. And
that's
like,
true. That's not an exaggeration.
No, it's not an exaggeration at all. His brothers were so pumped, and, like, he, like, picked up the phone. He's like, why are you calling me? Like, I'm sleeping. And, hangs up, which is just hilarious. But also, from his perspective, I think I can also understand that, because it's like he said in the piece, most players in Europe, I mean, especially him, when he's, you know, supposed to be a project, they stay for 2 years in Europe, and then they develop over there, and then they come over. So it's like, okay, I've been drafted, but I'm not going to go over there for 2 years.
Right.
Like,
and the whole thing happened so quick for him. I mean, he talks in the article, he's a kid all the way up until 16. He's talking about horses and this and that. And at 16, it was almost like they took me and I went to the bigger town, and now I'm a basketball player.
Yeah, right. It was just a very, like, sudden and rapid progression for him. But, it was really interesting.
Yeah, that was cool. So we'll get into some more of these details here, but I want to ask, did you get a sense for his personality? It's kind of funny, because if Jokic becomes, you know, a superstar, which he has the potential to be, you'll get to claim I was the first one to ever get a feature on him. I really think this was, like, the first feature he's ever done, you know, nationally. So,
unfortunately, I can't quite claim that. No. Jake Fisher of Sports Illustrated did a really good piece on him a few weeks earlier. You know, his personality, he's just a humble kid.
Yeah.
Like, he really is, and he loves playing basketball. He's kind of goofy.
Yeah.
Like, he's kind of your typical 20-year-old with a good head on his shoulders.
Right.
I think he's also helped by the fact that his brothers are here.
Are they here full time in Denver then?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And it's
living with him at the apartment?
Yeah, really? Yeah. They're living there.
Oh, man. I can't imagine that house. 3 7-footers. It's got to have high ceilings, I assume.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's like, it's,
I'm picturing bunk beds, like a triple decker bunk bed. Jokic is.
Look, I mean, he's an NBA player. He has a really nice place. So,
right.
Yeah, you know, one thing he said was that, you know, when he was young, he didn't want to hang out with his friends. He just wanted to hang out with his brothers.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. Yeah. And that was a really nice thing to hear. And so, and you know, his brothers are kind of his support system here, too. I think they've seen, you know, some other Serbian players and other just, you know, European players come over. And, you know, no matter how skilled they were, like, they weren't ready for that adjustment.
Yeah.
Whether it was the playing time, whether it was the money, whether it was, you know, you know, just adjusting to America. And so having that support system here, I think, has been really big for him.
And he's like 8 years younger, I think, than his brother or something.
I think it's 8 or 10 or something like that. Yeah. You know, one of his brothers played college ball here as well.
Okay.
You know, and it's funny looking at Nicola and then looking at you know, his two older brothers, like if he can become, like if his frame can fill out, like theirs have, like they're 7 feet tall, like walls of muscle.
Yeah.
They are just mountains. And so, you know, like one of the things about Jokic that, you know, we talk about is that what he needs to, you know, put on strength. Like he's already like a fairly strong guy, but if he can, you know, really fill out his frame, that's going to do huge things for his game.
Yeah.
And, you know, he certainly has the frame to do it. And if you look at his brothers, you're like, oh, okay, so you've got the genetics for it too. No problem.
Yeah. I want to ask you about this horse thing, because I thought that, the piece opens up. He opens up talking about how he was into horses and even says, you know, I took fourth place one time or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what that means even. Is that good? Fourth place?
I'm pretty sure it was good.
Is he like a jockey? Is that?
He was, yeah, he was like an amateur jockey.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, he loved horses. And, like, I think he wants to own horses later on, like, after his, like, career is over.
Oh man, that's awesome.
But yeah, my favorite thing in that story is when he said, like, it wasn't just like, yeah, I kind of liked horses. Like, he would go to the races and, like, just volunteer to be a stable boy so that he could just, you know, be around the horses, which is just amazing.
Is this something that's shared by his brothers? Is this, like, where he grew up, it's a horse town? Or is this just Jokic loved the...
I don't know. I mean, I know there were tracks there. We didn't really get, like, too much into the nitty-gritty of it. But I was just like, I remember asking, like, well, why horses? He was like, I just... really liked him.
That's funny. The other thing he talks about that I found so interesting in that article was he gives a really good visual for playing in Serbia and how intense the games can be. It sounds like he's a gladiator, because he says, you know, I'm standing in the hallway, we're a young team, and these drums start banging and everyone's screaming, and he's like, we're in the hallway. It reminds you of that scene of Gladiator when they're kind of getting ready to go out into the arena.
Yeah.
And you go on YouTube and just type in Serbia soccer fans or Serbia basketball fans. There's like trash cans on fire and people just going crazy. Did he talk a little bit about what that was like playing in Serbia amongst some incredibly rabid fans?
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, he says it right in the piece, and you know, he said that, you know, there's so much passion there, and you know, it's for them, it's like part of their lives more so than it is here. You mean, you think about how rabid we are about sports. With them, it's on another level. And I think, you know, it's interesting because, you know, it's not just him who said it. There is, like, Daryl Morey, I think he tweeted once when he was at a game. I forgot what it might have been. It was either in Israel or it was a EuroLeague game. And he was like, you know, I love the passion of the fans here. And, you know, even if you look up some stuff on YouTube, like you're watching videos of it,
it's
like
scary.
It is. They're throwing firecrackers. Yeah. They're throwing smoke bombs on the court. You're just like, what?
Firecrackers are so dangerous. They're not for indoors.
No, they're not at crowds all. Of people. Like a smoke bomb. Like, hot. And this is before the game too. Like, I'm sure if you ask, like, you know, some other players, and they're like, other players have talked about it too, like in the future on them. I know Patrick Beverley has talked a little about it, where there's just like. It's like, you think fans are crazy here, it's nothing compared
Well, Denver's kind of, Pepsi Center can get really rowdy this year, so I'm sure it was the exact same. all 200 people in the stands just going nuts, and firecrackers were everywhere,
they couldn't hear a thing.
Who do you think, the piece is phenomenal. If you haven't read it, go on Players Tribune or Google Players Tribune and Nikola Jokic. It's really, really fascinating. He's a fascinating person. He's a fascinating player.
And, he is.
And it's just kind of crazy to think that he went from sleeping through the NBA draft 2 years ago to a Rookie of the Year candidate, you know, just so quickly. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's a fascinating guy. Who else on the Nuggets? Obviously, you're probably not going to just write about the Nuggets or write with the Nuggets. But if you were to, who else do you think would be a fascinating person to write for the Player Tribune on the Nuggets?
That's a good question. Honestly, and I think it's just like in whatever capacity, whether it's a Player's Tribune piece or whether it's just like it's a feature, I'm always fascinated by Wilson Chandler.
Yeah.
You know, just in so many aspects, both as a player and as a person. Like, you know, in the games, they have the Jumbotron, and so they, like, you know, talk. They have videos, and the players will all talk about, like, you know, why they love playing in Denver or why they love living in Denver. And, you know, a lot of the players was like, oh, I really like, you know, like the fans or love the atmosphere. It's like kind of like cliche answers. Yeah, and maybe it's true, maybe it's not. But like
best
Wilson,
fans in the world.
Wilson's like, you know, I really like the mountains. I like being able to go outside with my kids, like, did, like, you know, skateboards. Like, wait, what?
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
I just wouldn't picture Wilson Chandler as a mountain enthusiast.
Yeah. That's cool. Friend of the show, Wilson Chandler.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's awesome. You know, the guy that comes to mind for me is always Mike Miller. Just because the NBA experience that he's had is such a unique NBA experience.
It really is.
He's had the, you know, very bottom of the barrel teams and injuries, and then he's had the best teams. He's played with some famous people, and I just think he's probably a guy. An interview or player streaming article would be cool, but I think talking to him at a bar off record would probably be
that'd
the
be
most
amazing.
Fascinating.
I think what interests me most about Mike Miller. Is that everyone loves him.
Yeah.
Everyone. At the shoot around earlier, or not shoot around, it was, like when the Cavaliers were playing in Denver, they were shooting around. It was like 15 minutes before the game or whatever. And LeBron is in his warming up. And Mike Miller just comes up behind him and gives him does a peekaboo thing with him. Like if any other player had done that, LeBron would have been pissed. He turns around, sees Mike, and just gives Mike Miller like the biggest bear hug. Yeah. And for the rest of that warm up, Mike Miller is sitting like on the bench right by him, just like, I don't know if he's like talking crap to LeBron or what he's doing, but he's just like jabbering away. Like it's just like his best friend.
He's like the most disarming guy. I've only interviewed him 2 or 3 times, this season, but he's just a disarming guy in that he can kind of say what he thinks in a way that's not offensive. I think the first time I was here, I said, what's it like going to a team that's rebuilding and you know, bringing winning experience? He said something to the effect of, well, you know, nobody on this team's ever won anything. And it sounds like when I say it, it sounds rude, but he was just making a point that, you know, everybody here has things to learn. And I don't know. I just, the way he said it with a smile on his face, I thought, man, this is a guy that like can be real, but not in a jerk way.
Right.
You know?
So, I constantly forgot that Mike Miller was on the Nuggets to like 75% of the season. Every single time he'd check in or they'd show him on the video board, I was like, wait, Mike Miller plays for the Nuggets? Why didn't anyone tell me?
He got a Mike Miller chant there at the end of the season. That was the small section of Nuggets fans in attendance for calling for him. Let me open it up to the whole NBA because the Nuggets have a lot of fascinating players, but you cover the whole league and you have for a while. Who are some of the most interesting guys to interview?
Whenever anyone asks me this, my first answer is always Chris Bosh.
Yeah.
You know, the Denver media environment being what it is, you can get some really good time with players just by being around at the right time, whether it's at shoot around, whether it's going to pregame interviews, because there's not a lot of media here.
Right.
So I've been fortunate enough to get Bosh one-on-one, I think, 3 times.
Oh, wow.
And just kind of walking up to him because no one else was there. And, you know, every time, like, I haven't, like, encountered another player who's as honest, as insightful, and who's as engaging as he is. Like, you can ask him, you know, stuff about, you know, whether it's basketball stuff, whether it's about stuff about his recovery, whether it's about, you know, the ridicule that he receives. He's very open about all of it, and I've never once gotten a canned answer from him.
Right. And that's the thing about that I've learned. I don't consider myself a journalist. I'm trying to become a journalist and learn that. But I think the big thing is, I'm a blogger. But the big thing is I learn is that when you talk to these guys, there's a wall up, right? And and sometimes you can tear down that wall with the right questions or the right approach or what have you. But most guys, there's that wall between them, and it's always an interview. Chris Bosh, I haven't actually interviewed him, but I know guys that are like other NBA players where that wall comes down really easily. And he seems like that kind of guy.
He is. I think it's just like he just has such a different outlook when it comes to interviews, when it comes to media, because, you know, he's been through the ringer before and whatever. And so he's just like, well, why not?
And comfortable in his own skin because people just make fun of him for so long.
He's so comfortable in his own skin. That's a very good point. Another player, even though I don't think I've ever gotten like the wall down around him, but I always just like talking to him and enjoy his answer, especially when he's like on a good day, is Robin Lopez.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. One, just because like of the way that he speaks, and I know that our listeners right now can't see what I'm doing, but so what the typical Robin Lopez answer is, and so you like ask him a question like, well, you know, you guys did a really good job on the boards tonight. You know, something just like really generic, like, you know, what was the key to you guys, you know, what was the key to you guys, you know, out-rebounding the Nuggets side. He goes,
these questions crack me up. By the way, they're asked every single game, and I get it. You're trying to get a quote or this or that, but it,
you're
trying to answer, what was the key to rebounding? Well, we went and got the ball.
Yeah, but and so Robin does this thing where he'll look up, and he goes, well, you know, we got, you know, I just kind of use my size for Reed and Hixon are, you know, just a little bit smaller. So, yeah, we're just able to get the rebounds. And then as soon as he's done, he looks down suddenly and, like, that's it. There's a, and there was a, so I just like him because he's also goofy. Like, if you get him talking about comic books, which I have done, like.
Really?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. He and his brother are just huge comic book nerds. So I'll go up and talk to him about comic books.
One of my favorite podcast moments was Zach Lowe had him on, and they had like 10-minute discussion about the best episodes of The Simpsons.
Oh,
and like,
oh
he
yeah,
just
it's
had
great.
Such funny insights and stuff, and
you know Steve McPherson, right?
Yeah.
So Steve did a Q&A with Robin Lopez about The Simpsons. It was in Rolling Stone. I think it was like a day or two later. He gets an email from Trailblazers Ping. Trailblazers PR saying, oh, by the way, Robin wanted me to pass along these additional thoughts on these episodes.
Like, he went home and made notes.
Yeah,
like,
right.
I forgot to mention this.
Exactly.
Like, he's going to want to know this.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. I like this one because, you know, inside the NBA, it's such a mixed bag for me. I love the show. It's a big part of basketball culture is that show. But, you know, at the same time, I hate the show and I hate some of the stuff they do. Who would be, if you could assemble an inside the NBA of anybody, and we'll just pick three athletes. We'll have Ernie Johnson because he can't be replaced.
No.
Three, he's there. But then you get to pick three athletes. Is there three guys that just that you've met, their personalities would lend themselves to interesting television? I know this is putting you on the spot.
It is. I wasn't prepared for this. This is good. Let me think about this for a second. But so are we talking about like active players?
It could be any players in active or in history or
man.
So you get like a whole wealth of experience.
Yeah, so seeing as how we just spoke about it, I think Mike Miller would also be awesome. Yeah. Or Sheed.
Oh,
obviously
my gosh,
Sheed.
What a great Sheed. Answer.
Can I just get wait, can I just end with that? Can I say EJ and Sheed?
Just the two. You know what I wonder with Rashid is like would his takes I think he would be really negative on certain things, but I don't think he would just be trashing every player. Like, I think he would have some funny things to say.
Yeah,
but when he did trash players, I think it would
be
going
amazing.
20 minutes of...
It'd be gold.
Yeah.
I think something like Sheed, Paul Pierce. Paul Pierce, when he's, like, engaged...
Yeah.
Gives really insightful answers. Yeah.
I feel like he'd be biased. I feel like he'd have a hard time being objective.
There would probably be some biases in there. But I'm just thinking about, you know, when he's retired. So, like, after this year.
Guys, I think about maybe, like, Boris Diaw has always been one of
my God,
I think
how did
has
I forget
a,
Boris Diaw?
Yeah, he just has, like, a wealth of experience, life experience.
Also, he would just
from.
Tell the greatest stories, I feel like. Or like, would just give these pithy, like, one- or two-word answers.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I feel like
he'd
get
very,
artistic
very,
in it. Yeah.
He'd be very French about it.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's funny. Well, that's a funny one. I kind of like that question. I think everybody, if you ask that to 100 NBA fans, they'd probably come up with 100 different answers of who they would put in there.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost like the Mount Rushmore thing. It's you can come up with a lot of
I really like
stuff.
That question. That's great.
I'm going to ask you, I'm going to move on now to the Royals. We're going to talk baseball because me and you both love baseball. That's a lie. I don't know anything.
That's
about,
a lie. Yeah.
I haven't watched a baseball game in maybe 3 or 4 years. I've gone to a few, but I didn't watch them while I was there.
Right.
I just hung out with friends.
Yeah, yeah. That's what you do at baseball
but
games.
But I do want to ask you about the Royals because they're world champions, and they kind of remind me in some way of the Nuggets in that they're a small market, mid-market team, doesn't necessarily have a rich history of winning, but kind of came out of nowhere and won. So, first of all, tell me about just – you know, you're a fan of the Royals, even if you don't watch them religiously.
Right.
But did it just come out of nowhere? 2 years ago, they were good, and then last year they won.
It was – so they made this amazing World Series run 2 years ago where they all of a sudden – and they went on this incredible hot streak to end the season, got into the wild card game. And then somehow just blew through the rest of the competition and made it to the World Series. And then they lost.
Right.
In some games. And I thought, like part of me, a lot of me was sad because it's like, I think that was our last shot.
Right.
Like, we're never going to get back there again. This was such an aberration of a year. Like, you look back, we hadn't made the playoffs since 85.
Right.
And so I was sad, but at the same time, I was like, you know what? Like, if that's our, like, our height, like, because it's so hard to win a title in any sport that I'm like, you know, I'm okay with that. I'm okay.
Right.
And then the next year, they were, like, good consistently. They were one of the best teams in baseball throughout the season, which is a very weird feeling to me.
Yeah.
Like, I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, well, clearly they're not going to keep this up.
Right.
And then they did. And, like, they were, you know, they didn't blow through everyone like they did the first time. You know, they had to have multiple comebacks.
Right.
And every single time they were down in, like, the seventh or the eighth, I was like, that's it. That's it. You know, good run, everybody. But, you know, this is time for this thing to end. And it didn't end. We actually won the World Series. Like, that's a thing that happened. I didn't think I'd be able to say that in my lifetime.
Right. And that's the funny thing about sports, and especially small market sports, because if you're a fan of the Lakers, like, they're going to go through their ups and downs, but they're going to be good. At some point, they're going to be good. If you're the fan of the Royals, or if you're a fan of the Nuggets and you make it to the championship game, at least it's hard to wrap your head around it because you want a championship, but sometimes you have to be content with, man, we were pretty good there.
Right, exactly. You're like, I think it's kind of the George Karl thing. Like, you had 10 straight years of playoff appearances. Like, not everyone can win the title. Now, there are criticisms coming from that, but like, any team in any sport would kill for that.
Right.
That's a really nice model of success.
Yeah.
That being said, winning the title is a really nice feeling.
Right. That's too funny. And it was cool because there was all these pictures of the Royals parade. And how many people were there?
Oh my God. I mean, you know, hundreds of thousands.
Were you there?
I didn't go. I actually went to game one, though, of the World Series both years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the first year, you know, it was a disastrous game, and Matt Moore, who had lived in Kansas City for a long time, was like, "You're not allowed to watch any more Royals games, or go back to to the game again. You obviously cursed them." And then I was like, "Yeah, you're right. Hey, by the way, I'm going back again." And but they won it this time. But no, I wasn't there for the parade. It would have been pretty cool to have been there for it, though.
You talked about the Royals missing the playoffs for so many years. What's the Royals fan base like? Because it's not that far away from the Cardinals, who have a huge fan base and one of the most annoying fan bases in the world, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But they're not that far away. They're not that much that separates them. Is there a big, consistent Royals fan base? Or does it kind of grow as you guys got better?
No, there's always been a consistent Royals fan base, but I think it's tough to stomach losing year after year after year after decades. The interesting thing is that, you know, and this happens obviously with sports everywhere, when a team suddenly rises and, you know, wins a championship out of nowhere, is that there are a lot more younger fans.
Yeah,
now and people in. Yeah, people hopping aboard, and, you know, you can say those are bandwagon fans, but, you know, if they're not, as long as they're not saying I've been a fan since the beginning, like, if they're like, yeah, I'm a fan now because they're winning, good.
Right.
Winning is what makes fans of people. Like, I have nothing against that.
There's such a funny thing about morality in sports, right?
Oh, and my God. Like, it's the worst.
We're good because we're there. And it's like, man, I would take so many bandwagon Nuggets fans right now. I would take anybody going to the game.
Yeah. Like, absolutely. It. You want fans. Yeah. And winning is what breeds fans. Like, what? Did you want them to be fans that are losing? It's hard to be fans of a losing team, especially one that had no prospects for a very long time.
Right.
So there is a consistent fan base, and it's also, I think you probably know this being from Denver and, like, in the Midwest as well. It's like, there's a very fierce Midwest pride, and so people have a lot of love for Kansas City, and so then when, you know, the Royals started doing well, like, that love swelled even more.
And that's what's so funny about Denver, and I think this would be a good transition to talking about the city of Denver, but Denver's such a great city in my opinion. I love the city so much. The Nuggets don't feel to me like a part of that. I mean, they are a part for me, but they don't seem married to the city the way other parts are. If you think about Denver, you think about microbreweries, and you think about skiing, and you think about the Broncos, perhaps. If you just ask somebody to name things associated with Denver, it would take like 100 things before you got to Denver Nuggets.
I think part of that is the success of other teams,
of course,
and the popularity of other teams. Like, we always talk about a Nuggets game that's, you know, Broncos first, Broncos second, Broncos third, Broncos fourth, Broncos fifth, Rockies, like, sixth, then more Broncos, and then, like, Avalanche, and then you get Nuggets at the bottom. Right. I also think it's tough if you look around the league for a lot of NBA teams to feel ingrained in the city.
Yeah.
I don't – maybe it's because the games aren't outside. That could be a
could
thing.
Be a big part of it.
You know, it's not as much of a, as, like, a casual atmosphere as it is, like, when you go to a baseball game or when you go to a football game. There's not as much pause in the action. So, you know, I think it's tough. Like, there's obviously the Bulls, the Lakers,
Celtics.
The Celtics, but even like where they're like hugely popular, like it, like Mavericks, for example. Like,
yeah.
You know, I don't know if that really is like such like a deep part of Texas. I could be wrong.
No, you're actually right about that.
So I think it's tough, but I would agree with you. Yeah,
I don't want to lament the state of the Nuggets fandom right now because
right.
we've done that enough on the show already through two episodes, but. I do want to ask you about the city of Denver, though, because Denver is becoming increasingly a city of transplants and people moving here and getting younger, especially the urban core of Denver. And you're one of those transplants. You come from Kansas City area. So what are your impressions of the city of Denver? What do you think of it? Just broad terms.
It's changed so much even in the 2 years that I've been here.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, some areas that like looked up and coming are now like beyond up and coming. Like, they're there, and now there's already like the new area popping.
Right.
It's getting too expensive.
Yeah.
Like, Denver, please stop raising your rents everywhere.
Right.
But I you know, I think it's a really good city. I think there's a few things about it that, like, I'm not as big a fan of, like, you know, traffic and whatnot.
What are some other things? I'm always curious. I mean, this you're not offending anyone in the city of Denver. I think everybody knows it has its positives and negatives to it.
Yeah, I don't. You know, I don't know. It's kind of tough to put, just like my finger on. I think it's also a lot of stuff that I would say about Denver is a lot of stuff someone would say who had moved to another new city.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
But I was having an interesting conversation the other day with another Denver native who's my age, and he was saying, you know, one of the reasons a lot of people wanted to move here in the first place is because of the culture of Denver.
Mm-hmm.
But the people who made up that culture are now being pushed out,
right?
Because of, you know, the prices and jobs and whatnot, and so it'll be interesting to see what this city looks like and what that culture is like in 5-10 years when it's, you know, even now it's a lot more transplants than it is natives. Like, I have a few friends here who grew up in Denver, and when I talk about going to like the Highlands, mm-hmm. or, you know, like Rhino, they're like, those aren't real neighborhoods. Like, those don't actually exist.
Right. I think Highland is like a very specific area that's now become the Highlands, which is like every area surrounding
it. Yeah, basically. Yeah. It's anything like past the bridge on the highway.
It's become plural now, but it's really just Highland. But yeah, that's interesting. I was at a party over the weekend with some friends, and everybody would kind of joke that nobody here is a native. And I said, well, I am a native.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, I haven't. We never
meet. You're like a rare animal. Yeah.
Exactly. Which is kind of interesting. The other thing I find interesting, you're from the Midwest, so this is not true of you, but I had some friends in college. I went to Colorado College, a private school. It's like 80% non-in-state people. So there's a lot of people from East Coast. And somebody said they picked Colorado College because it was close enough to the beach and the mountains. And
what?
It's like,
no.
Like, yeah, they were like, oh, I thought we could drive for the weekend to like California or something. I was like, there's a couple states.
Did they bother looking at a map?
I think it was a little more tongue in cheek, but it still gives you the idea that you know, there's funny impressions, I guess, to what Colorado is. And then a lot of people also say, DJ Augustine, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this was DJ Augustine was interviewed at the end, and he was like, I didn't realize Denver was such a nice city. I thought it was a much smaller town.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's. For free agents, you know, Wilson Chandler talked about how much he likes it here. Gary Harris wrote a note talking about how much he likes it here. I think Denver might get the Salt Lake City treatment, or, you know, where people think of it as this little isolated spot.
Yeah, I think when I talk to people about Denver, they never know what to think about it. There are so many varied opinions and varied perceptions of it that they're like, oh, it's a mountain town. Oh, it's a bustling metropolis. Oh, it's this, right. that. It's like, it's like neither of those, just like kind of like a nice, like bigger Midwest city, I guess. Right. But I think that's also because Denver doesn't quite know what it is. Yeah. It's in such a state of transition. It's in such a, like, there's so many people moving here. Right. I think they're expecting like millions more in the next 4 or 5 years that, like, you know, it's tough to know what a city is, because if you had asked someone even 5 years ago, they wouldn't have said, you know, right, what they would say right now.
Right.
And then last thing, the other thing that like, kind of bugs me about Denver, and this is, again, I think a product of the all transport and whatnot, it's like kind of a lack of diversity. Like, it's a little,
gotcha.
Yep. Bothers me a little bit.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I come from the northeast suburbs of Colorado, which is like a Hispanic suburbs.
Right.
So it's always kind of interesting too for that. Just there's isolated pockets of different, you know, racial or ethnicity, socioeconomic parts. And
yeah.
And I find that interesting because it's really the suburbs. You maybe think of that as in past times being more urban diversity, but now it's like suburban diversity.
Yeah, right now there's very little urban diversity.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, that's cool. It's always good to hear outsiders' thoughts on the city, and obviously a thoughtful guy. So you go from being thoughtful to now we're going to have you just play a game.
Excellent.
Not be too thoughtful at all.
I'm ready.
Let me ask you the first question. The basketball gods are kind of assholes, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
They're like the worst gods possible. They're not worth worshiping, really.
Yeah, although you do realize the danger of trashing them on your podcast with the lottery coming up.
You know what? This is my style, though. This is this is how I am. I'm not going to suck up to anybody, not even the basketball gods. So they can curse me with more and more terrible draft picks. But, you know, the playoffs, the basketball gods have showed up over and over again already, just totally taking out the Clippers, possibly taking out the Warriors.
Yeah.
We'll see who's next on their list. But now I'm going to put you in position of basketball god, and you are going to rank the lottery teams in terms of karma based on who deserves the number one pick most.
Ooh.
Deserve has nothing to do with, I don't think, how the lottery works. But if you were to rank the teams, I want to know who you think deserves this number one pick.
Oh, man.
And the funny thing about this, there's really no criteria. It could be for moral reasons. It could be for need. It could be anything. So.
Okay, so last are the Lakers.
I kind of like this, but you're right. The Lakers have... What are some of the things working against the Lakers for karma purposes?
Well, mainly that they're the Lakers.
and they don't need it.
They don't need it. Like, yeah. Also, they just got D'Angelo Russell.
They moved up. They were fourth last year.
Exactly.
And they moved up. Yeah. Oh, I killed... The Nuggets have never moved up.
Timberwolves also... So, but for a much less, you know, malicious reason, like...
Yeah.
They're set.
Yeah, here's some of the things working with them. They have Karl-Anthony Towns, who is a better player than has come out in the last maybe 4 or 5 drafts.
Yep.
They got Thibodeau, who's going to be probably a top 5 coach immediately. As long as he doesn't wear them out. Bad attendance. Maybe that's a negative thing working against them. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So I can't believe they've bought them too. I think I had Minnesota in like the top 5 or 6.
You had them in the top 5? Oh, they've bought the number 1 pick like pretty recently.
Part of me
twice.
Just thinks like, oh, you add one more player. You see, I'm an NBA fan, probably a little bit more than I'm a Nuggets fan. I'm a big Nuggets fan, but I just want to see great basketball. So,
oh, yeah.
You add Ben Simmons or Brandon Ingram to that team and it's like, "Oh, I'm watching every game."
Yeah, sure, but then you're getting greedy.
Yeah,
like,
that's true. The basketball guys hate greed.
That's
above
true.
All.
It's true. I
like this reverse order, by the way.
Oh, you like me working to the
top?
Okay.
By the way, those two teams have like the best odds to win.
You know what? I kind of.
Oh, I see where he's going. This is harsh.
It is. It's harsh, and I'm sorry, but I think the Kings are up there simply because, like, they've done this to themselves.
They deserve
like, it. Like, if it was bad luck, if it was the basketball gods continuously crapping on them, that'd be one thing.
Right.
But you kind of made your own bed.
They've got a new arena next year. They've got a new logo, new uniforms. Why not a new player, fresh start?
Why not a new player, fresh start? Look, that'd be great for them. At the same time, like,
Yeah. I think they have also a weird pick swap anyway. I don't think they can get a top 5 pick or else it goes.
Do they have Sixers pick?
It's like I think they swap or something,
right,
and it falls
right
backwards. So But we'll put there for karma reasons. We'll put them back there.
Yeah,
anyway.
Karma reasons. They're still back there. I'm kind of going to go actually Suns here.
Wow. Man, all the teams that are like in desperate need.
Well, look, I know they're in desperate need, but I also think the Suns, you know, this is karma striking them because they messed with a good thing.
Right.
They had Goran Dragic and Eric Bledsoe, and it worked pretty well, and it was fun. They had Jeff Hornacek, who I thought was a tremendous coach. And then they're like, well, let's add another point guard, because what two point guards would really love to do is actually share the ball more with another point guard.
Right.
And that worked out just beautifully.
Yeah.
And also Robert Sarver. Yeah. You know, his whole rant about millennials.
Oh, my God. He might be last just on. The funny thing is I'm like half Gen X. I'm 32, which I think I'm technically a millennial. But I think from like a mental standpoint, I'm like a cynical Gen Xer
or
something.
Sure.
I hate this millennial optimism, but yet I'm so defensive of millennials for some reason. It's really cognitive dissonance, I think. I don't know what it is.
Huh.
But you're right. Bringing that up about, sorry, I almost forgot about those comments. He belongs way back there.
He does belong back there. You know, now we actually get pretty hard. So the remaining teams we have are Magic, Bulls, Bucks, Raptors, Sixers, Celtics, Pelicans, Nuggets, Wizards, and Jazz.
I think there's some easy picks here.
They do not deserve it. Really?
A lot of my, I think
maybe
I,
the Celtics.
Yeah. What do they need it for? Their historic franchise with the most championships.
Also the smugness. They get docked for the smugness.
Oh my goodness, insufferable.
Yeah.
I'm going to go on a rant here because at CC it was a lot of New Englanders, right?
Yeah.
And I had no impressions of New England before this. In 2003, I think the Patriots won my first year of college. The Patriots won.
I'm so sorry.
Rich kids, like rich beyond anything I'll ever touch, running through the quads, just celebrating their perfect lives. And then after that, the Red Sox won. And I'm not kidding you. This entire school, whether you had ever been to Boston or not, had turned into Red Sox fans. And after they beat the Yankees and went through that, it was another parade our school held for Red Sox fans to parade through the quad.
Oh, my God.
And it just seemed like – and then I think Boston – or Connecticut won, and then the Red Sox won again. The Patriots won again. Every year I was there, there was two or three championship parades, and it was just like, oh, it was the worst. So,
I'm so sorry.
Sorry, I'm out on Celtics.
I went to my freshman year at University of Connecticut, so I feel your pain.
Okay, there you go.
I'm going to go Wizards here.
Okay.
Because they waited too long to fire Randy Whitman.
Oh, that's probably true. He tried to change, though. He tried to become a progressive coach, and it didn't work.
It didn't work at all.
That's a fair pick, though.
Yeah. And now it gets tough. I kind of want to go, no. I mean, I like Magic, but not Bucks. This is tough. This is tough. Maybe Bulls.
Bulls would be one of the ones that would be immediately out for me. See, they have talent. They have six championships.
They have talent, but I also think they've suffered, and maybe I should have docked them for this, for their front office thinking they're much better than they are.
Oh, my goodness. You're right.
I don't want the players to suffer for the the front office's hubris.
The theme of this is so far is billionaire smugness, right?
Yeah, basically. Billionaire and fan smugness is basically
true.
Or if you've already gotten like multiple picks.
Right.
Now this gets really hard.
This is interesting.
Bucks, you're fine.
Wow.
Would you have taken the Bucks out?
There's a couple teams here that I think are right on the that for me are pretty easy to eliminate.
The Jazz. Really? Why do you think the Jazz are easy to eliminate?
Because they're already good.
Wait, hold
that,
on.
That factors in a lot for this. For
so
me.
How do you have the Jazz as like an easy out, but the Timberwolves like one of the like top one or two?
That's true. That's a good point. You found my hypocrisy.
I think, and I honestly have no reason for this. Bucks.
Okay.
I don't have a reason for it. Sometimes the gods just do what they want to do.
That's true.
You're
looking at the Magic.
I've been looking at the Magic for a while.
They have a lot of young talent. And still a coach that'll grind that young talent into dust.
Exactly. I'm a big fan of Rob Hennigan, their GM, though. Their owner is...
Their owner, though, is, yeah, their is owner, top, bottom five, right?
Yeah, the owner is definitely bottom five. Bottom so five. I think, actually, I would take him out. I would take the Magic out before I took the Bucks out.
Okay, plus they've had two number one picks. You know, in a, as a short franchise, you don't need too many.
That's true. That's true. all right, so now we've got Raptors, Sixers, Jazz, Nuggets, and Pelicans. I'm going to go with the Nuggets next. Because, and I think this is actually a good one, because I think the Nuggets actually make their own luck. And they do a pretty good job of that.
Okay.
Tim Conley's pretty good at the draft.
So we can get the 15th pick and it'll be fine.
Yeah,
we don't need,
totally
don't need
fine.
Number one.
No, no, you don't need number one. Like, it'd be great for you. At the same time, I think you're one of the teams whom, if you didn't get it, would do just fine without it.
That's such that you. I think you think that feels good, and it doesn't.
No, I know it doesn't feel good at all. I can see your pain right now. Actually, you know what? I think I'm gonna go Raptors.
Oh wow! I just talked him out of it.
Raptors and then Nuggets. So now we have the Sixers.
Masai Ujiri and his replacement go back-to-back
in
the Karma draft.
The Sixers, the Jazz, and the Pelicans.
Okay.
The Sixers, I think, deserve it. I think I gotta like. I think the Jazz are my first doubt.
Okay.
Right. Because there's like.
But they still get a number three pick in this scenario.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's not
so
bad.
Now it's Sixers and Pelicans.
Okay.
So my argument for Pelicans is that, one, so front office dysfunction, there's that. They've.
Yeah.
Although, like, this can go either way. Like, maybe they don't deserve a number one pick because they had Anthony Davis, a generational talent, and
they didn't do very good with it.
No, they've wasted it a lot. So this could actually go towards the bottom. At the same time, I feel bad for Anthony Davis, whose talent is being squandered currently, because Smoothie King Center was built on some ritual burial ground,
right?
And they're cursed forever.
It just sounds funny to say Smoothie King Center.
It didn't feel good rolling off the tongue.
It didn't.
And then Sixers, because long live the process.
Oh, you know what? The process is dead, though. That's the thing.
Is it though?
It would be so weird for the 76ers to finally win it.
So this is the Pelicans are six and Sixers are interesting ones for me because they could have been right now. They're at the top two.
Yeah,
I could have put them also easily at like the bottom because what I said, like the Sixers, like after the way you treated Sam Hinkie, like you don't deserve the number one pick.
Yeah,
like
and
so, but at the same time, it's like. It'd be a nice kind of like thumb in the eye for them to get the number one pick. And there's like, hey, look, my plan was actually working all along.
If I know the basketball gods the way I think I do.
It's going to be the Lakers.
Well, the Lakers the Lakers will win it. The Celtics will get number two.
Yeah, right. Of course.
76ers will probably get number three somehow. Number three, yeah. Well, that was fun. It sucks that the Nuggets aren't higher, but to be honest, it's hard to argue against some of these other teams. But I will say that Brandon Ingram would look very good in Nuggets blue.
Yeah, he would. He would.
Jordan, thanks so much for coming on, man. I had a great time talking with you. Some interesting topics discussed. Anything else you want to plug or anything before we go?
No, I don't think so. This is great. Thanks for having me on.
And I also have to give him a thanks because I don't know how to use technology in any capacity. And I showed up trying to show him how this works, and it ended with him showing me how this works. So I might just have to have him on a guest every single week. Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to figure this out on my own. So.
I'll be here.
Thanks a lot, Jordan.
Yeah, no problem.
Take care.